Good morning. Hi. So this morning, I'm going to start out by talking with citing some research by a couple of professors, Richard Nisbet and Takahiko Masuda. They presented 20-second animated video vignettes of underwater scenes to Japanese and American participants. Afterwards, participants were asked what they had seen, and the first sentence of their response was categorized. The results of the study were remarkable. While the Americans mentioned larger, faster-moving, brightly colored objects in the foreground, such as the big fish, the Japanese spoke at a 65% greater rate about what was going on in the background. For example, the small frog to the bottom left or the plants. In addition, the Japanese spoke twice as often as the Americans about interdependencies between objects up front and objects in the background. As one Japanese woman explained, "I naturally look at all the items behind and around the large fish to determine what kind of fish they are." In a second study, Americans and Japanese were asked to take a photo of a person. The Americans most frequently took the photo up close, showing all the features of the person's face, while the Japanese literally never took the photo with the person taking up most of the total space. Instead, they showed the person in their environment, with the human figure quite small in relation to the background. In a third study, Nisbet asked American and Taiwanese students to read narratives and watch videos of silent comedies and to summarize them. As in the first two studies, the Americans made about 30% more statements referring to the central figures of the stories than their Taiwanese counterparts did. East Asians, be they from Korea, China, or Thailand, are much more likely to follow the Japanese or Taiwanese patterns in giving more attention to backgrounds. Pretty interesting. Pretty interesting. We think about Asian culture, which, of course, Buddhism is such an important part and parcel of. And we think about modern-day Asian culture, and we're thinking, oh, those people are interested in meditation. They don't sit. They don't get this stuff. But it's kind of in their DNA. It's kind of in their DNA is what we're learning here. Buddhism is in their DNA, whether they're Buddhists or not, in a way. Maybe not Buddhism, but this interdependency, right? Interdependence and valuing the whole. What Suzuki Roshi called big mind. Of course, they don't use that term. They're all becoming Christians. But look. They live that way. So interesting, isn't it? Interesting. Big mind is the word my teacher Suzuki Roshi used for this, the whole, the little fish, the big fish, the frogs, the toads, the polywogs, the whole thing. I think the word is not that important, but in fact the word is not important. So today I'm going to talk about a couple of stories from the Gateless Gate. That's the whole. No gate. No division between the big fish and the little fish. Everything is open. Everything is moving around interdependently. in some wonderful harmony, which doesn't necessarily look harmonious, but it is, because it's all in this great. Great ocean of life. This set of stories is called the Gateless Gate. Now, Robert Aiken calls it the Gateless Barrier, but actually everybody else calls it the Gateless Gate, so I'm going with everybody else. Gateless because it's open. And then there's a gate because we need to do some practice to recognize the gatelessness. We need to have a gate into gatelessness because we don't know it. We don't know it. This Japanese woman, it sounds like she knew it without even doing zazen. Interesting. But most of us, we don't know it. We don't know it. So we need a gate to gatelessness. I'm holding up Robert Aiken's book here, by the way, which is the series of stories in the Gateless Gate, compiled in the 11th century from interchanges that took place in the 7th through the 10th centuries. So we need to choose a gate to realize that it's everything's gateless. And some of you have chosen this Zen Center as your gate and chosen me as your teacher. And that's cool. That's cool. I think what's good is to look around and find a gate that appeals to you, that resonates with you, and then stick with it. Not supermarket too much, but do enough gathering of information so you feel good about it. Just don't stumble in here and think, oh, this is the great way. Although you could, I stumbled in the first time and thought it was a great way. So I guess you could do that. Sure, why not? Stumble in. I'm going to talk about two stories from the Gateless Gate today. And the first is Case 44, or Story 44, and it's about a guy named Bachao. Now, the Japanese pronounce Bachao, Basho. But don't confuse this with the famous Japanese haiku poet, Basho. Not the same guy. Bachao. Came to China from Korea to practice Zen Buddhism, and his teacher thought he was cool. Of course, teachers think all their students are cool. Really. How could we not think you're all cool? We're all swimming in the same ocean, aren't we? Big, little, fish, frogs and toads. All cool. How could it be otherwise? So, anyway, his teacher gave him the Dharma name. You know, that's a Buddhist name. I have a Dharma name. Everybody who's been initiated by me has a Dharma name. Bachao. Well, Bachao means plantain tree or banana tree. Isn't that deep? Well, actually, it's pretty deep. because as I was reading about it, well, a plantain tree, banana tree. Well, the deal with a plantain tree or banana tree is that it has a whole bunch of layers of leaves, and the stem is made up of many layers of leaves, and then inside what? It's completely hollow. completely hollow. And so those layers remind me of the what we call the aggregates in Buddhism, the aggregates, layers of sensations, bodily sensations, layers of feelings, layers of perceptions, layers of impulses, layers of consciousness, and we peel those layers away through our practice. And instead of discovering the Big Tim, it's hollow. It's hollow. It's open. So this is a wonderful name for this young Korean guy to have gotten from his teacher. Wonderful name. And then, of course, he became a famous teacher himself. And I think, and I'm not clear if the haiku poet Basho, I better not get into that because I haven't researched that. But I think it would be the same. When you peel it away, when you see, when you're actually in awareness of your sensations, when you're in awareness of your feelings and your impulses, and all the desires that are coming up and all the stuff you want to do and didn't do and should have done and might do, when you're just in awareness of that, not commenting on it at all, then the layers themselves do peel away, and there's great stillness, great openness, great gatelessness. In other words, Suzuki Roshi used words, big mind. Always here. Always here, but requires that diligence in your practice, in your practice not to be anyone, but just to be aware. And of course, what happens when you cut through all those layers and you find the hollowness inside, with a plantain tree or banana tree, again, I read this, I have not tried it, is that sweet water comes through the hollow part. Sweet water comes pouring up, pouring out. That's a pretty good metaphor, isn't it? That's pretty cool. That's pretty cool. It's true, though. It happens. It happens. Very sweet. Very sweet. Very wonderful to realize that that all those sensations, all those perceptions, all those impulses, all those worries, all those fears, that they're there. But if you simply focus your laser attention on them, you don't make anything out of them. You don't make anything out of them. And when you don't make anything out of them, they do fall away and expose a big mind. Big mind, which is not a mind at all, just a metaphor. So that sweet water is always flowing out of our stem. No matter how pissed we are, or upset we are, or healthy we are, or sick we are, or depressed we are, that sweet water is ready to flow out. All we have to do is just peel away the layers of all this stuff. Not peel away in a conscious way, but just through zazen. Just through bare awareness. Right? Pretty simple, huh? I know it's not so simple. It is simple, but I know it doesn't feel simple. It doesn't feel simple. Story number 44. Pa Chow's staff. Okay, so I brought this staff with me this morning. I brought it from upstairs, downstairs. No, we'll talk about it. So this is a staff in traditional Zen, traditional Buddhism. This is a staff that's used in the mountain seat ceremony. See, I've been the guiding teacher here for what, something like 10 or 11 years, and about maybe 9 or 10 years ago I had a mountain seat ceremony in which usually after you've been the guiding teacher for, I don't know, a year or two, you have a mountain seat ceremony in which you kind of formally become the head teacher in the monastery or in the sangha. So we had one of these, and I read afterwards that I was supposed to have made this stick myself. I was supposed to have gone up into the mountain, found the stick and carved it. But somebody did it for me. I have no idea who did it. Do you know where it came from, Rosemary? So, and it's supposed to be wild. That is, we don't embellish it, because a big mind doesn't need any embellishing. We're always embellishing things to try to make them better, but big mind is wild. Not wild in the sense of vicious, but just in openness. Wild. In my mountain seat ceremony, I carried this down to my mountain, and the mountain was, I was just sitting up on this kind of stool-like thing, and I clanked it down, and then I said something wise, I presume. Should have been wise, at least. Right? So, again, in traditional Zen, this staff is associated with a mountain that the teacher sits on. Of course, the mountain is my is my zafu, my cushion, right? I sit here with all beings and invite them all to join me on the mountain. even beings that kind of distract me and irritate me, I still invite them. The staff is associated with the mountain, and each Zen temple in Japan and China has the word mountain in it. It's or the name of the mountain. So even in the United States, we with all of our retreat centers, we put the name mountain in, or the name of the mountain. So this staff is associated with a mountain, and that's all kind of cool stuff, isn't it? I think it is. maybe that's all I need to say about that. Oh, well, the staff is supposedly is the way in which the teacher takes care of the mountain. Supposedly, the staff takes on the characteristics of the teacher, but I hardly have ever seen the staff. It just hides in the corner of my closet, so I don't think it's taken on my characteristics, although you guys can check it out and see. And the other time the staff is used, in particular in the 21st century here in Minneapolis, Minnesota, is in the Shuso ceremony. And we've had a lot of practice periods here. We do practice periods, and some of you have been involved in our practice periods here, where people commit themselves to do sitting for at home and or here for 7-8 weeks, and then they come here for a class once a week. And then at the end of the practice period, if I've had a co-teacher with me, someone who's been ordained for a few years and has been really working on peeling away their layers so they can enjoy the sweet water, then at the last evening, they have questions and answers, and they take one of these stories from this compilation or one, a couple other compilations, and they answer questions about it. And I come down with my big stick, with my big staff, before it starts, and you know I get to do I get to go like this while I'm coming down, and then they bow to me. Of course, they need me to, you know, be obeisant, right, or whatever you say, right? And then I give them the staff. Then they have the staff for the ceremony, and they answer questions from the participants, from the people who've been in practice periods, about anything related to the story, that is. But it's related to your life. This is all about our lives. This is all about encouraging ourselves and others to slow down enough and be aware enough that we can let go of that baggage that we just don't need to carry around. That those layers seem so impenetrable, so thick, so unwieldy, that sometimes we think they're made of metal, but they're just layers of leaves. Just layers of leaves. So that's why we practice. That's why we practice, to discover that sweet water. So I've done this with, I counted it up yesterday, I've done this with seven people. So seven people, a number of whom are in this room, have been through the ceremony where they were Shuso, or they were teacher, and where they took the staff, and answered questions. And this last one was a woman named Bonnie Verbon Cure, who lives in Maine. And to me, it seemed magical when I gave her the staff, because she did such a good job of just being herself and just listening carefully to people and just giving them support. So maybe this staff is really magical. Maybe I shouldn't just keep it in my closet. Maybe I should, I don't know what I should do with it. Sleep with it or something. Anyway, that's the staff. That's the staff. Now the story itself. And you know, these stories are succinct and generally somewhat impenetrable, right? The priest Bachao said to his assembly, "If you have a staff, I will give you a staff. If you have no staff, I will take a staff from you." So then he said, he went on, woman commented on this by saying, "The staff helps you to cross the stream when the bridge is broken down. It guides you back to the village on a moonless night." So the staff then helps us when our bridge is broken, when we're in despair. My job, but it's really my pleasure. It's my pleasure is to help each of you who are trying to practice, to help you when you feel like the bridge is broken. And actually, when you feel like your bridge is broken, you have a pretty good opportunity to peel away the layers, because you're not so stuck on the layers; they're not working very well. So the very fact that your bridge is broken is not bad, because then I can give you my staff. I can support you in some way. I don't know how, but somehow I can do it, and I don't need to know how, because the sweet water is coming up, right? So I don't need to know how. No need to do that. So the staff then is for you to lean on, to get support from me, or to get support from the in practice period, the person who's the shuso. And then there'll be another guiding teacher here in a year or so, I presume, and you can lean on that person's staff too. So after I did this ceremony this last fall with Bonnie, Barebone Cure, Bonnie said to me at the end, she said, "Oh, thank you. Thank you for all of your support and all you did to help me." But really, I don't think I'd done anything in particular to help her, except show up. But you know what Woody Allen said about that, right? I did show up even when I was ill. and I felt like, she thanked me. When I saw kind of how she peeled away those layers and in the ceremony, and hopefully in her life, was able just to be who she was, then I felt helped. So the big fish, the little fish, the frogs, the toads, who knows? They all help each other, right? The seaweed, the moss, they all help each other. So let's see. Continuing with this story, it helps you to cross the stream when the bridge is broken down. It guides you back to the village on a moonless night. If you call it a staff, you enter hell like an arrow. Ooh. Well, what's the deal there? You enter hell like an arrow. Well, it's pretty simple how we, pretty quickly we get entangled with our self-concepts, don't we? Pretty quickly. Now you've heard all this about the staff and about Buddha mind. It's time to get entangled, right? That's what the mind does. It gets all entangled in the stuff. Pretty soon, your fish gets bigger. You don't look at the foreground, the background anymore. You're just the big fish trying to get all the oxygen you can in there. And the little bit of space you have as you get bigger and bigger. And it happens to all of us. So where I just was on vacation was with people, my relatives, extended family, and some other people. And some little people, too. I like little people best. Sorry, I'm sorry about that. I should like big people just as well, but it can't help it. So one night they were debating. They were debating about, I mean, they were debating in a friendly way about atheism, theism, and agnosticism. These people, I'm not going to identify them. And I was just listening to them. And their fishes were getting bigger as they were debating. Their fishes were getting bigger. And the more they debated, the more big their fishes got. And it was interesting to watch. It was interesting to watch how quickly we get stuck on concept. You can be a... So, for me, it doesn't... I could care less of myself, personally, about atheism, theism, and agnosticism. Those are just terms. They're just terms. We... Debating them, you get, it's just, you're just a big fish. Everybody debates them, they're big fish. Of course, it doesn't mean that debate isn't good, but what's the value of that? How does that help you peel away the layers of anxiety and fear and separation and just discover some deep quietness inside? How does that help? I don't see it. See, well, maybe one of you can educate me about this during coffee. So, okay. So now I'm going to talk about the next story. Story 45. Story 45 also is. Very simple. See, sometimes in these stories, the teacher's just talking, and he just has one sentence. That's the whole thing. That's true for both 44 and 45. Although 44, he has two sentences. 45, he just has one sentence. Wutsu said, Shakyamuni and Maitreya are servants of another. Tell me, who is that other? Oh, deep. Who is that other? Who is that other? So, maybe they're servants of God, or maybe they're servants of the agnostic or the atheist. Who are they servants of? Well, interesting. And of course, these stories, there's so many different interpretations of it. I'm just going to give my interpretation for the moment. It won't be my interpretation next time I talk about it, because I will have forgotten what I said anyway. So, Shakyamuni and Maitreya. Shakyamuni Buddha, the historical Buddha, right? The young, privileged man who became a sage. Know the story? It's a cool story, isn't it? Cool story. Cool archetypal figure, right? Unfortunately, he didn't just become the sage. He had to do all this practice first. But that's the deal. That's the deal. And then his partner, Maitreya, the Buddha of loving kindness, whom we will encounter in the future through our practice. We'll encounter him in the future. And of course, when it's all peeled away, the future's here. The future's here because it's just another concept, right? So Maitreya and Shakyamuni hanging out together. They're our servants. They're our servants. They're here to serve us. We've created these archetypes for us. These archetypes are for us so we can practice. So we can get a little taste of this sweet water through our quieting our mind and looking at all the layers of concerns, not fighting with those layers, not fighting with those worries. Just letting them be there until they just chill out on their own, right? They do, just on their own. The big fish can't do it. Sorry. Sorry. I'm not sorry. I'm not sorry at all. So So these are our, they're servants of us. We created them. Well, of course, Shakyamuni really lived, we think, but we really don't know much about him. We really don't know much about him. The Pali Sutras claim to know a lot about him. And then, of course, the Mahayana people turn him into some huge, empty deity, right? And Maitreya seems to have been made up later. But there are servants. There are servants. Something that Shakyamuni attained that we want. We'd all like a taste of that sweet water just to peel through those layers and let that sweet water come up in our lives. It's a taste we want. We need that archetype to encourage us, don't we? Don't we? And we need to do this in a spirit of loving kindness, not competitiveness, not who's going to get there first or who's going to be the head teacher around here. Not that. Not that. But loving kindness. Big fish, little fish, frogs, koto, it's polywogs, right? Loving kindness. Polywogs are just as important. Watch the polywogs. Wow, watch them. You know the term polywogs here in Minnesota? Okay. I wasn't sure. I've only been here 40 years. But we collected polywogs when I was a kid all the time. Anyway, I'm digressing. I'm digressing. What am I digressing from? So, these archetypes are our servants. They're our servants. They're our inspiration when we feel like even the staff won't hold us up. And then we go back and we read about Buddha or about Maitreya or about Dogen. And they give us some help. They give us some support, right? They are our servants. They are our servants. And we need to have some faith that by practicing in that spirit of loving kindness that Maitri in Sanskrit, Metta in Pali, loving kindness. In practicing that way, we will be able to appreciate this, the hollowness that's at our core. Not the kind of hollowness that T.S. Eliot talked about. Poor T.S. Eliot. Sorry, but that's my editorial comment. If you know T.S. Eliot's poetry, maybe you don't. So, there's a gap that starts out between the student and the teacher. There's a gap that starts out between us and Buddha, between me and my teacher Suzuki, between those of you who are my students and me. There's a gap. But, and you know, we can keep that gap open forever. We can keep it open forever. And it becomes like an open sore. It's like, I'm not good enough. My sitting's not good enough. I can't really do this. My mind is so out of control. That here I've been sitting for da-da-da-da-da, and my mind is still like a, I don't know, 747 or whatever. But that gap, we do begin to let go of that gap when we can just settle in more and more to who we are, more and more to just let these layers of worries and fears just be as they are and not judge them, and not judge them at all. And not worry so much about attaining. It's the big fish who wants to attain. We want to resume our wholeness, don't we? Our wholeness, which includes everything. And we want to do that by occupying our own skin, our own life, not chucking it out, not saying, I don't want to be Tim anymore. Not chucking it. We say peel the layers away. We don't mean chucking the layers. Because if you chuck them, who's the one who chucks them? That's more layers, chucking the others. And you've got more and more and more layers, and the layers are fighting with each other. Right? So,
fully occupying this space, whatever the space is, if it's a discouraged space, if it's a tired space, if it's a happy space, if it's a happy New Year space, if it's a shitty New Year space, shitty New Year. Right? Well, right. You feel that way sometimes. Oh, God, it's already the 7th, and all those resolutions are just gone. I'm never doing those stupid resolutions again. Well, Maitreya wants you to do a resolution, but your resolution is loving-kindness one, reaching out to part of yourself that's struggling, that's worrying, and just being with that part. Being with that part. Okay, so let's do some commentary for this last story. By Wu Men. Commentary by Wu Men. See, Wu Men does the commentaries on all these. He's the one who compiled them. And he did them about 200 years after supposedly they happened. Okay. So again, the case, Shakyamuni and Maitreya are servants of another. Tell me, who is that other? Said Wu Tzu. Wu Men. Woman says, if you can see this other and distinguish him or her clearly, then it is like encountering your father at the crossroads. And it's like encountering your father at the crossroads. You will not need to ask somebody whether or not you're right. It's your father at the crossroads. Well, what's the image there? The image there is encountering something that you're very, very close to. You're very, very close to that you didn't expect, and that's authoritative and nurturing. At least that's my image, that's here with you already. That other is just occupying your seat, occupying your life, occupying your moments. And you're surprised that you can do that. Sometimes in a retreat, all of a sudden you just let go of all of that stuff about trying to do it right. And you're just here. Wow, you've encountered your father at the crossroads. Your mother at the crossroads. Your sisters and brothers. And you didn't expect it. When you expect your practice to go well, it was not going to go well. It won't. Because that's more layers you're putting on. That's more layers. It's only when you gently, gently be with those layers. Let those layers just fall away on their own. That you encounter the heartfelt big mind, heartfelt Buddha mind. It's so close, so close. If you can see this other and distinguish him or her clearly, then it is like encountering your father at the crossroads. You will not need to ask somebody whether or not you're right. You don't need to ask somebody whether you're right. You don't need to get into atheism or theism or agnosticism or Buddhism or Hinduism or any isms, do you? But still, I'll initiate you as a Buddhist. But don't believe it. This is not about belief. This is about actually settling in to being here in the world as the world. We're just a tiny little fish, but we've got the whole world as our aquarium. Our aquarium. Don't draw another's bow. Don't ride another's horse. Yes, you don't need to do it. For a while, you need to do it. Depend on another. But at some point, you don't need to do it. The archetypes then have become who you are. Become who you are. But the archetypes are still a little bit woo-woo-y. So don't, even the archetypes. If you say you become the archetypes, then you think, oh, I become a perfect person. You don't become perfect. No way. You don't become at all perfect. You just become what you are. That's all. Okay, so we all want to have this kind of personal experience of opening up to Big Mind. And it's great that we have Shakyamuni and Maitreya as our servants, and Dogen, and all these guys and all these women and for centuries. That's cool. And they help us become more grounded in our personal experience. And the goal here is to help others swim in this big ocean and help them discover the sweet water too. So it's important that we not think that we've gotten something from practicing. Well, I've practiced for 2 months and I've gotten something, or 2 years, or 20 years, or 40 years. If we think we've gotten something, then we set ourselves off from each other. Then right away, I'm the big fish. I'm the Roshi around here, you guys. Come on. I'm going to swallow you up, right? That's my job. Big fish swallow little fishes up, right? Come, little fishes. Time for dinner, right? Mmm, tasty. So this isn't something we get credit for. You get no credit for doing zazen. No credit. Sorry. No credit. Extra credit? No. No. Zero credit. Zero credit. Because that's more layers. That's more layers. Just settle in. Just settle in. And we don't, when we have some experience, and you will have some experience, if you do this practice of daily sitting and doing retreats. You know, we have retreats once a month here, a lot of retreats. A lot of retreats. You'll have some experience like this. And then you'll get excited about it. And then you might come see me. I will say, I say, well, good, but I'll maybe pour some water on you. Do you understand? Probably. But not too cold. Not too cold. Warm water. How far? So, this is all about, this gateless gate is all about, and these stories I talked about today, opening up to our common humanity. We have a common humanity, which you don't read about much in the paper, or on TV, or on the internet. But we have a common humanity. A common life, a shared life with each other, with everything. A shared practice that we all take responsibility for. Just come to a retreat and see how people practice together, how people share responsibility. Many people, the people who prepare the food, the people who work in the kitchen, people who serve the meditators, people who ring the bells, the teacher who gives the fabulous talks, the timekeeper, all together. We've been doing this now in Zen for, I don't know, let's say about 800, what, 800, 1300, 1200 years we've been doing this. Pretty cool, huh? Pretty cool. But let's not turn it into a big fish. Let's not turn it into a big fish. If we can do this together, if we can create a center together here where we appreciate the plantain tree just as it is, we don't discard the layers. We just are with the layers, use the layers as they fall away for good compost to create more plantain trees, and then settle in so much that we can get the sweet moisture coming up from the hollow core. Always coming up, continually coming up. Wow, that's pretty good. If we can do this here in our little group, then we can extend it out to Joyce Church, to North Minneapolis, to Iraq, to Afghanistan. Little by little, extend it out. Not too ambitious, right? Not too ambitious. Just little by little, moment by moment, extend it out. Share the sweet water. Share it. Because it comes up forever. It's inexhaustible. Okay, I think that's what I want to talk about. So, be glad to entertain questions or comments. Yep. Yeah.
All the imperfections are perfect.
Did you say all our imperfections are perfect? Oh, hey. Good. Good. They're all perfect. We're perfectly imperfect. Let's not get hung up on this. Each of our imperfections is a chance to learn, a chance to go deeper. A chance to, in our imperfection, we notice where we're doing too much big fish stuff. That would be a definition that I'm using of our imperfection. We notice there's too much big fish stuff, and then we see through that imperfection, we just begin to notice the other fish. If we didn't have that imperfection, if I didn't have that imperfection of, I can't think of a good example. Maybe you can. Then I wouldn't practice. And I wouldn't practice. But because I have that imperfection of thinking that I'm the biggest fish in the pond, then I'm encouraged to do my zazen and to see how those layers create this great being called Morris Timothy Zen Tetsu Burkett. Those are all my different names, right? A wonderful fiction. A wonderful fiction. But it's a fiction that gets us in trouble. It's got all kinds of imperfections attached to it. Even a wonderful name like Zen Tetsu, thoroughgoing Zen. Oh, wow, what's that? Well, if it's thoroughgoing imperfection, that's cool. If it's thoroughgoing perfection, I go, oh, no, can't do that. But if it's, as you said, perfect imperfection or imperfect perfection, then why not? Sweet water coming up. Always coming up. Because we're not getting caught by one side or the other. Yeah.
Just a comment on that. I think of it as like a mathematical equation, if you will, where you have an imperfect and perfect, and they cancel one other out, so it should be neutral.
Oh, Nagarjuna. You sound like the... that. This is very good, what you said. You should read the Madhyamika, Nagarjuna.
Instead of fighting either side, glorifying one and bashing the other, just agreeing with you, acknowledge both sides, and just letting that layer, as you say, kind of shed away, being calm with itself. So instead of comparing and contrasting what is ideal, which is perfect, and what is less than, your quirks, or what have you, if you can acknowledge and be aware of those two, I guess, opposite creatures. Just go, oh, I'm aware of, I have a, the ideal, fixation of wanting to be perfect, but I have all these flaws. You just become aware and just say that these both things don't exist, but they exist, and have it be more of a neutral.
Well, that's good. That's good. But it's not a neutral feeling. It's not a neutral feeling. It's a feeling of great joy. Of great joy. Yeah. As long as it's neutral, it's still our mind. It's still our mind trying it. But this is... big mind is not... So everything you said was great except the neutral part. It's not neutral.
Like you said, all the language
described. Not neutral.
Yeah.
Neutral as long as we're still trying to get it. Trying to get it. But once we just see the layers as they are, let them fall away. This is non-contingent joy, you guys. It's non-contingent. I'm not kidding you. Forget Buddhism. Forget all this stuff. It's not contingent on whether I'm healthy or what's the other say? Not contingent on whether I'm discouraged or discouraged or encouraged. It's not contingent. Yeah.
Okay. So you've been meditating and you're peeling away your layers and you're feeling good, joy, And then you want to get to the point where you are able to share that.
Yeah.
Can you elaborate on the composting part of your layer?
Oh, the composting part. Well, that wasn't part of my talk. So. I have some notes here, and then I do other things. Well, the composting is so important, though, actually, because that's the part that we see that we begin to. I recognize that I let me see if I can example. I recognize my health is always a good example. So I recognize that because of my good health. Well, see, I've had good health now for a little while, but because of my not good health, I have to let go of layers of trying to do so many things. I try to do a lot of things. I don't know where that came from, but I have to let go of those layers. One of the layers is a layer I love, which is being guiding teacher here. I have to let go of that layer. So when I let go of it, I shed the layer. Well, the layer then creates compost, creates fertilizer for my life. So the very let going of that, it makes me feel sad. But I can really be in touch with that sadness. And be really alive in that sadness by seeing it and letting go of it. So it that sadness enriches me and also gives me it enriches me and makes me feel connected to the people that I'm no longer going to be the big fish with anymore. No, I'm going to be a little fish and a polywog with. So if I didn't have the bad health, that wouldn't all happen. So the compost then draws more sweet water out because it gives fertility to the bamboo plant so that it can produce more and more sweet water all the time. How's that? Yeah.
Comments about the banana metaphor because I've grown bananas before.
Oh, she's grown bananas.
So I can, number one, verify the claim that there's sweet water in the middle, and actually each layer sweet water leaks out. And if you cut down a banana, it doesn't matter how far you cut down, a new banana will grow.
Hey, good Zen, even better Zen.
And bananas.
The kind you grow for food don't have seeds.
You can only
just
cut it into your own
new banana. I'm sorry, I didn't say.
The kind you eat don't have seeds.
Uh-huh.
So you can only make a new banana by the cutting.
Oh, so. Deep. Boy, this is a whole other lecture. Wow. So where did you grow bananas?
I live in Latin America.
In where?
In Latin America.
Oh.
In Colombia.
Colombia. Oh, wow. Okay, good. Thank you. Thank you. Yeah. This will be the last one.
So could we say a big mind is also a big mind, big heart?
Sure. You know, yeah, sure. I much prefer heart mind to mind. I prefer the word shin, S-H-I-N, as in Hanya Shingo, as in the Heart Sutra, heart mind. Yeah, but a heart mind, it's better to say. I actually prefer that. But my teacher used big mind, so.
Okay.
I prefer that because of the. The loving kindness part. loving kindness part that just comes up. It just comes up. And you want to share. You can't help sharing, supporting. And then you get so much back by your sharing. It's not like you're trying to be some sacred person. You just get so much back. So, yes, thank you.
I don't want to follow that with, there's those times, in, let's say, when I'm in my relative self, those layers, and then I'm not feeling very compassionate or kind to myself, and we get stuck in those parts.
Yeah.
Wouldn't it be helpful to be able to have some type of a dialogue with oneself or with other people?
Oh, yes.
Where we're getting in touch with those different parts. You know, it's like we have all these different...
Oh, yes, it can be very helpful. It can be very helpful, you know, and that, of course, that's why a teacher does doksan, you know, has one-to-one meetings with students. I do it on every Sunday, and I have three people signed up today, and of course. Yeah, of course. And the other priests here have one, do one-to-ones with people? Of course.
Because often it seems like I've gotten fixated on certain identifications with parts of myself and that whole...
Yes. 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 Yes.
And so it's like, okay, sometimes I'm in my controlling self.
Yes.
Or my
yes.
critical
yes.
self.
Yes.
Sometimes the damaged self or the seeking mind, and to elicit the, you know, the way-seeking mind.
Yes. Yes. Exactly. Exactly. Very important. Very important. Yeah. That's it. That's the staff, really. The staff. I give you a staff, even though I have nothing to give you. By just us having a conversation about this to help you. To help you. Yes. Thank you. Okay. I think it's time's up. Thanks a lot, you guys.